Welcome back to the Answer of the Week, where Joe Patrick and I pretend like we know everything and compare and contrast your answers to the question of the week. Joe Patrick, what do we ask these nerds this week?
This week's question was, how has a comic creator's actions or attitude changed your impression of them for good or for ill?
Or this for evil?
Is a deep one, folks.
Why don't we start with the Facebooks, since nobody tweeted at us. Now, this is a hard one to tweet
It's a complicated question.
You're not going to be able to 140 characters like, Joe Casey, he was a dick.
Complicated question for the tweeters.
He's not a dick. He's actually a lot of fun to talk to in person.
Our first response came from Nathan Bradford, who said, Frank Miller, let the horse flogging begin.
I'm not sure where to even start with Frank Miller, and maybe we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll come back around on Frank Miller.
I feel like that's a whole podcast.
Yeah. Ian Eppenbaugh writes, one thing I learned a long time ago, separate the art from the artist.
I agree. I'm with him.
J. Michael Straczynski isn't a people person. Orson Scott Card is a terrible human being. But as long as they keep making quality content, they could skin puppies alive in their basement and I wouldn't care. I don't know about that, Ian. But so help me God, if Jonathan Hickman starts puking out garbage, I'll write a mean post on the internet about it.
Ooh. You know, I agree with him. And it's a tough one because there are people that, like, I don't agree. Like, Ethan Van Sciver. He's a controversial guy.
Well, it's one thing to say, I don't know if he's even controversial. He's got different political views than I do.
He's straight up controversial.
Well, sure. Like, but, I mean, if you want to go through life only enjoying things that politically line up with you, well, you're going to have a tougher time.
This is where I'm going with that.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoy a lot of what that guy does,
sure,
art-wise.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
you have to separate the man from his art.
To an extent.
He's correct. To an extent.
But I will say that in the case of, like, Orson Scott Card, who one could argue actively funds a hate group, sort of.
What's the hate group?
Oh, that, like, National Coalition for Marriage or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
he's, like,
yeah,
the
yeah,
president of it.
Yeah, that's bad.
And they actively lobby. He uses his celebrity to actively lobby against marriage equality.
It really is. It's tough. It's
and
tough.
And maybe calling it a hate group is a stretch, but not that big of a stretch.
I don't think it's a stretch at all.
I'd say people would be well within their rights to not support his work financially.
Yeah. No, and I can understand.
And that was the controversy with Adventures of Superman.
And I can understand that.
Ian goes on to say, however, having met creators like Kyle Higgins, who's one of the nicest people I've ever met, it makes me want to like their content. In the case of folks like Higgins, it's not a big deal since it's already good quality, but in the case of shitty or mediocre creators, I'm probably more likely to give their stuff more of a chance.
Hmm.
Like if they're super nice and he has a great interaction with them.
Is he saying Kyle Higgins has like weird politics or something?
No, he's saying he met Kyle Higgins, who's an awesome dude.
Right.
And
seems
it
like
just
awesome
so happens that his work is also awesome. But if Higgins was an awesome dude but a terrible writer,
okay, save for okay, gotcha.
He'd probably be more likely to give Higgins
vice versa
more
okay
rope. You know,
I gotcha. I see where he's coming from. No, I agree with that.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of what we do on this show. We read a lot of stuff with a grain of salt and say, well, this is not the most professional thing in the world, but these guys are really giving it a try or whatever.
Yeah, totally,
absolutely.
Dwight Brown says,
yay, everybody.
Good. Yeah. Dwight Brown says, this is more of a personal response. I was ambivalent about B.M. Bendis. And I love that that's catching on. They're
I know.
Doing it
I know.
Us
I love it.
Asking.
I want someone to approach him and tell them that we're doing this.
I was ambivalent about B.M. Bendis until I met him at Wizard World Chicago a few years ago. After a few minutes of conversation, he intrigued me enough that I went and purchased all the back issues of Powers. Am I a complete convert? No. But I will always try something that he works on.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've met guys like that as well and walked away and tried their stuff and said, hey, like Sean Murphy was that guy for me. He was coming out with a book called Joe the Barbarian. I met him at a con. I didn't really know it. I knew Grant Morrison was writing it. I'd probably check it out. But I bought some stuff from him, including some pre-sketches of Punk Rock Jesus stuff. And now that dude's one of my favorite artists on the planet.
Yeah, he's rad.
Love that guy.
John Boucher says, Scott Snyder's occasional twit pics of his beautiful, happy family have totally destroyed my mental image of him as a dead-eyed madman who writes his stories in a filthy, candlelit shack sitting on a chair made of human bones.
Yeah, you would never know. Because, like, Scott Snyder, if you follow him on Twitter, happiest guy in the world.
Yeah. Like, all those photos of his family dressed as members of the Bat family on Halloween.
Or, like, having dinner together.
Katie Coleman, who I'm saying welcome aboard, even though I may have already welcomed her aboard.
Welcome
once
aboard, Katie. Yeah. Female listener number 8.
There you go. I take the personal is political, motherfuckers, approach. Comics is such an exciting, inspired medium that has more great stuff in it than I can ever hope to read. so why spend my limited time and money on people who are assholes? Tony Harris, I am going to take my fake geek girl money and spend it elsewhere. Orson Scott Card clearly does not deserve my glorious lesbian attention.
Whoa. I'm a big fan of glorious lesbian attention, by the way.
And for every jerk, there are dozens of people that, from their public personas at least, seem both talented and amazing. I want to move to Portland and become BFF with Matt Fraction and Kelly Sue DeConnick, for example.
Good choices. Greg Rucka's out there, too. Fun to drink with.
Mm-hmm. And Bendis.
And Brian Michael Bendis, yeah.
That's right.
Portland's crawling with these guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of them. Yeah, Tony Harris very famously had a Facebook rant a couple months ago about the fake geek girl phenomenon.
What?
About women at cons that dress up in sexy costumes and are just there to get attention and prey on...
Okay.
Dudes, I read a lot of what he said and his responses and him trying to say, you guys just didn't understand what I meant was this.
Right. And if it upset Katie...
And the bottom line is, he is not a well-spoken individual.
Right. And if it upset Katie, I'm sorry. On behalf of Tony Harris, I'm sorry. Because I think Tony Harris is a nice guy, and I don't think he meant to upset anyone.
I think he did mean to upset some people.
Well, okay. I don't think he meant to upset women everywhere.
Right, because he did come back and make future posts where he said, I know legitimate fans that are passionate about... his bottom line to me, I mean, I can't speak for him because I'm not in his head, but to me, his point seemed to be, I know legitimate female fans that are passionate about this material, and having these plants, I guess, diminishes that.
Spokesmodels, if you will.
And it's not even the people that are hired to be there. It's people that are just there to get attention. Regardless, that's off topic. And I totally understand why people were offended by it.
Yeah, and Katie, I'm sorry you had that. I'm sorry you felt that way, but we love having you here.
John Luttrell, our buddy from Burnt Wieners, is a coward and refused to answer because he didn't want to burn any bridges.
Cry, baby.
Whatever.
Is that what he said? I don't want to burn any bridges?
He said, this is the threat I avoid, so I don't burn any bridges.
What, is he dating a bunch
Winky
of these people?
Face.
What is the deal?
Michael Robertson writes, I met Sean Phillips... Not to be confused with Sean Murphy.
No, I just did that.
A few years back, and that really put me off him. It's a shame because he's a great artist, but he was so rude and horrible that the experience left a sour taste in my mouth.
I've heard this too.
I think he had an overinflated sense of self-worth, especially as I met David Mack this year, who I think is much better, and he was humble and gracious. In fact, Sean Phillips is the only creator that I've found to be like that. On the other side, people like David Peterson of Mouse Guard,
sweetest guy in the world,
have made me a lifelong fan purely because he was such a nice guy. I'm pleased to say it works the other way. And that was the point of the question.
Yeah. Sweetest guy in the world. David Peterson. Mm-hmm. Totally approachable. And it's sad because I've heard that about Sean Phillips as well. Now, I will say, and I'm not going to go into it right now, but I had an interaction with David Mack that kind of made me go, ugh, you know, we have to keep in mind that we don't know how many people these guys have talked to, who was just...
You're catching them at different times,
right.
And maybe it's like, oh, I really wanted to get away to the bathroom, or...
Who was just a jerk to them, how much sleep they got last night, how hungover they are, we don't know, and not to mention the fact, these guys are nerds. At the end of the day, these guys are nerds, and they don't all communicate as well as, say, I don't know, you bump into a guy like Austin Kutcher or something, you know, Ashton Kutcher or something. Somebody who deals with the public a lot. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's important to keep stuff like that in mind.
Yeah.
And I don't think Sean Phillips was probably trying to be a dick. We don't know. You know? But then
maybe
again,
he is.
Maybe he was.
Listen, the point of this
not
question
the first time I've heard
was
it.
Not to have Matt Baum defend every personal interaction all of our listeners have had with comic book creators.
No.
Ryan Forrest, our lawyer, the THN mouthpiece, says, Todd McFarlane.
The THN consigliere.
Yeah. While unquestionably one of the best artists of his time, and I still enjoy his art today, his attitude and how he comes across is the Webster's Dictionary definition of douche-magouche.
Fair enough. I would go jackass,
okay.
But yes.
His opinion of himself and his importance in the comic book history is laughable. For crying out loud, the guy is 52 years old and still wears a gold chain in public. He is probably hiding an IROC with missing T-tops somewhere in one of his empty toy warehouses.
Oh, they're not missing. They're off on purpose.
He was a panel guest on The Talking Dead this season, and his comments were so self-serving and arrogant as if he came up with the idea of zombies or thinks he could actually do the TV show better.
Whoa.
Plus, I am not happy that he somehow tricked me into buying hundreds of toys, all derivative of one another.
Nobody tricked you, sir.
Yeah, that sounds more personal regret. He is one Spawn sequel away from the next Frank Miller. Yowza.
Jeez.
And of course, how could I, of all people, forget the lawsuits, the stupid, stupid lawsuits. You know where stupid lawsuits come from? From people not smart enough to solve their own problems. He gets what he deserves. And with that, I think it's appropriate. Neil takes Angela to Marvel, maybe the best FU in comics in a long time.
Fair enough.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll say one thing for our friend Ryan. He feels all of his feelings.
The dude knows a worthless lawsuit when he sees one.
The dude knows no mercy. Brian Domingos writes in saying, it's usually negative, but sometimes not. There are the politically vocal folks, and even if I don't agree with them, they are at least civil about it.
Right.
You can see that they have a brain.
Yeah.
With so much access via the internet, it's easier to get a feel for someone based on personal interactions and seeing their interactions with others. There have been a few that I've been turned off from completely due to rampant self-promotion or retweets. I was interested enough to already be following you, so the 8 out of 10 review from some site isn't going to make me buy it more. That I get. Then there are the guys that constantly critique the industry with how, quote-unquote, they would fix it.
Right.
But they don't ever put out regular work. When I see them retweeted, I cringe. But nice people are nice, just like in real life.
Fair enough. Domingos brings it strong every week.
Every week, that guy knows what he's talking
about. Nicely done,
Brian.
Yeah. And I totally agree. There's some people that I definitely don't share politics with. Correct me if I'm wrong. Willingham.
Republican.
Yeah. Hardcore, kind of conservative Republican guy. Well, I don't know about hardcore, but conservative Republican guy. But you know what? Quiet about it. Isn't out there ranting and raving, you know, unlike Some other creators that also work for DC, who shall remain unnamed.
We already named them.
We may have already named them.
Yes.
A difference in opinions is what makes this country great. We can all have different opinions. Whether they're good or bad, that's another story. That said, leave it out of your comics. It's not where it belongs.
Well, unless you're writing a political comic.
If you're writing a political comic, but, hey, that's fine.
Camarillo Brillo writes in saying, my choice is Jim Shooter. When I was a kid, I assumed he was the king of everything cool. And that he was a dynamic, creative force.
He was.
His name was on every comic I loved. I knew he was just an editor, quote unquote, but I pictured him sitting and sending out mandates to the willing staff to execute. Fast forward to when I found out a lot of that isn't true. He was a tyrant that stifled creativity and had a cookie-cutter format that he expected staff to cop to. I read that he once planned to kill every hero in a quote unquote Big Bang and replace them all with new iterations. Kind of like a new 52. He alienated a lot of artists and writers I respect. He invented the new universe, which I loved then, and got booted from the best comic book company in the land. Guys like him would have killed books like Watchmen, Nightly News, Saga, and Transmetropolitan. I know editors have to play an antagonizing role opposite of artistic staff, but he excelled at it. My respect for Jim disintegrated, as did my playful dream of being a comic editor.
Wow. Now
that is harsh.
Shooter is a controversial guy, but I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's been some very vocal opposition to everything Jim Shooter's done, but there's also guys that have said they love Jim Shooter.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like every...
just fine with him, and there was some great stuff that happened while he was around.
During Jim Shooter's tenure, a lot of cool stuff happened in the comics.
There was some great stuff that happened.
But I have heard horror stories. I have heard these stories.
I have too.
But... I mean, there are two sides, you know?
Of course.
He comes back with a P.S. Last week, Matt was mentioning how Dark Horse overspent to acquire Solar and Turok, then pissed the properties down their own legs. That was another stroke of Jim Shooter genius. After getting booted from Marvel and his own damn company, Valiant, I think they brought him on board at Dark Horse to reboot some Valiant books.
That's true.
Apparently, it went poorly. Is that true?
That is true. He did write some of them, but I don't know about the money deals and stuff like that.
So. Well, I mean, the money deals are irrelevant. What the bottom line is that creatively speaking, he was involved.
Yes. And they were a steaming piece of crap.
Well, hold your horses. The newest THN love slave, Wooly Toots, is in the midst of writing a look back at the Dark Horse Gold Key revival as we speak.
That guy's all over the place. Video games, comics. He's a geek's geek. He's a nerd's nerd.
Slight spoiler alert. I think he's a little bit more fond of him than we are.
Oh, boy.
New Mutant? One of these days, I'm going to know that dude's real name. First, he says, oh, thank God Todd McFarlane is 52 years old. For personal reasons, it just feels better when a comics icon is still older than you are. I can't say that that applies to many in the business these days because I'm old. Anyway, ever since John Byrne, I've been very cautious about paying attention to my favorite artist's personal views. Because John Byrne drew sunny, wide-eyed Kitty Pryde and charming, modest Jean Grey, and that there was just a general innocent and clean tone to his style, I just thought he'd be like that in person. Foolish me. It's like believing Bill Sienkiewicz would be some type of shadowy, fractured schizo of a man. maybe that analogy doesn't apply. Anyway, yeah, John Byrne. Sometimes he says intolerant and ignorant things, but his work never seems to, and that is true. I'm just saying. The man's got opinions.
I get it.
And I don't agree with them.
No, I don't either.
But I would be lying if I said I saw any of that shine through in his work.
Fair enough.
Ever.
Fair enough.
And finally, Larissa Bradford.
Welcome aboard, Larissa.
I think so. Welcome
aboard. Female listener number 9. Yes!
2-in-1 show.
Woo!
Trips to my local comic shop never lead to even a passing glance at the all-ages section. Well, that is until a little podcast called Aw Yeah introduced me to Art and Franco.
I thought she was going to say us.
No.
Damn it. Why are you writing us, Larissa?
Well, obviously she listens.
Right.
The stories the duo shares are hilarious and endearing, from talks about collaborating with their kids to make new characters, opening their own comic shop in beautiful Skokie, or their Kickstarter campaign being a smashing success.
That's Skokie, Illinois, I believe.
It's the only one I know, buddy.
That's the only one there is.
It is because of their passion that, for once, I am actually excited about an all-ages title, Itty Bitty Hellboy by Art and Franco, due out August 28th. Will be mine.
Oh, boy.
What, does she work for him?
Maybe.
Come on, Larissa.
Are you a plant, Larissa?
No, I think it's awesome. I think that Art Baltazar and Franco are a huge driving force in all-ages comics.
They're a bang-up team.
And if it wasn't for those guys, I don't know.
Yeah, they're a bang-up team.
Certainly. Everything they do is just, like, without question, put it into the hands of a kid and even an adult. I am excited about the stuff that they put out as well. And I did not know how they have a podcast. So thanks to Larissa, I'm going straight home to download every episode of the Aw Yeah podcast.
I didn't know they did either.
I know.
Speaking of Wooly Toots, he called us this week on the Skype. Let's see what he had to say.
Yo, bros. I got to tell you, the thing that affected me most from a creator was probably when I saw Darwin Cook at the Fan Expo. I don't know what year it was. But he made some comments. Somebody asked him about how he felt he was never going to do superhero comics, or he wasn't going to be doing it anytime soon. And they asked him what could DC do to improve their books and stuff, and he kind of went off on this little, like, 3-minute rant, complain. The first part of it, you can tell he's pretty much complaining about Frank Miller's All-Star Batman. And granted, that's probably the number one. Frank Miller's probably your number one creator. People are coming at you with, I don't know, I'm not reading your Facebook answers or nothing like that since I started this Skype machine. But I think All-Star Batman got a bad rap because it's not that it's bad. It's just different. And people don't know how to handle it. But the book still sells. I know the back issues go because I replenish them. Okay, anyways, and then he said he got on how I believe he's mad that Batwoman and Montoya came lesbians, or the characters that they are now. Anyways.
I remember that.
And he called writers too stupid or uncreative. And that was a gimmick. And after I saw that and him say that, I mean, I love the new Batwoman. I think she's a really great character. And but he said all that stuff is catering to 45-year-old pervs. And as I get closer to that age, I took a little offense to what he said there. And ever since then, Darwin Cook's light has dimmed a little bit for me.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I remember that thing about Batwoman. I remember him saying that, and to me, it read a little bit more genuine than homophobic, like the Tony Harris thing.
Right.
The way I read it was more like Darwin Cook, who is obviously a huge fan of the Silver Age, thinks that taking a character that pre-existed, granted, she has not been in continuity in decades
right.
at this time, or in his estimation, you know, tarting her up into this lesbian character and then unleashing her into the world to be gimmicky. And I get what he was saying.
There's an element of truth to that. I mean, like you and I talked about the Batgirl issue where we found out that her roommate was transgendered, and the way that they handled it was so sure. gimmicky. It was just ridiculous.
Now, I disagree with Darwin Cook. That version of Kathy Kane, who was the Silver Age Batwoman, is a character that had not been used literally in right. decades, except for in like What Ifs or Elseworlds or whatever.
Right. And I disagree with him as well. I really like the new Katie Kane as yeah. a lesbian. I think she works really
but,
well.
But, you know, I do think he, I guess my point is that he wasn't saying it from a point of like a homophobic thing.
Right.
It wasn't like he had a problem with gay characters. It was just changing a character rather than inventing a new character.
Right.
But I get it, man. I can see how that would rub people the wrong way.
Sure, sure.
And I definitely didn't agree with him. I think Batwoman is phenomenal.
Let's move on to our direct phone number. That's 402-819-4894. If you want to call us and leave us a message at the Ziggurat, which is exactly what TD Dubs did. Let's hear what he had to say.
Hey, Joe and Matt. It's the TD Dubs, your favorite love slave. Hey, I'm calling in about the question of the week. You're asking about creators, seeing them in a good light or bad light. And I would say over the past 4 years doing work with Champion City Comics, my website, shameless plug, I've had the opportunity to work with some people and actually talk to some people through email and through social media. And there's been some great people out there who are willing to help other comic book creators do their best. And one person I can think of is Steve Bryant from Athena Voltaire. He's been a great help to us and generally nice guy. Ross Campbell, follow him on Twitter. He also did an interview for Champion City Comics. Great guy. If you follow him on Twitter, he's very funny. Another really nice guy is Jeffrey Brown, the guy that does Darth Vader and Son. He's worked with us on some stuff at Champion City Projects, provided us with some stuff. Really cool guy. And then there's Matthew Bogart. He's got a really cool webcomic called Cherus Hiatus. He's got another one called It's the End of the World, or Oh, It's the End of the World. Really cool webcomic. You got to check it out. And definitely, you find some great people out there in the world of comics. You work with them. You meet them through email. You meet them at conventions. Really, really nice people. Another name I'll throw out there, Tim Seeley. Seen him at a couple comic book conventions. Always willing to work with the fans. Always signs an autograph. Generally nice guy. Keep up the good work, guys. Talk to you later. Bye.
TD Dubs getting blown away.
Calling from the wind tunnel. Yeah, he raises some great points.
Well, let's move right on. Let's move on to your thoughts. You said you were going to save him for the end of the show. What do you, like, hit me
with
your thoughts?
Well, I'll say...
We're done. Let's go.
Well, no, we have to give our answers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give your answer. Let's hear it.
Jesus. Shut up.
Respond. Let's hear it.
So I have two interesting creator interactions, and neither of them were, like, super negative. Like, I've been pretty lucky that I've never had a really negative creator experience. I've seen the same things online that everyone else has, you know. I've
sure.
seen the Tony Harris thing. I've seen the Darwin Cook thing. I've seen Rob Liefeld blow up repeatedly on the internet. But I will say that Rob Liefeld will always, always have a place of respect in my heart because many years ago, I was at Wizard World Chicago working at the convention and he was just on his free time walking around the booth with a buddy, and he wandered into our booth. We were set up as a vendor. He was looking around, and, you know, I pointed to my boss. I said, "That's Rob Liefeld. Rob Liefeld is in our booth shopping for stuff." I stopped him, which, you know, normally I wouldn't have the guts to do, but I stopped the guy, and I said, "Look, I'm really sorry, man. I just wanted to say, hey, you know, thanks for stopping by. It's nice to meet you. Can I get a picture?" And he posed and took a picture. And then he said, "If you make this into a dartboard later, be sure to send me one." And for him to have that much self-awareness
right.
to kind of know his own reputation and
sure.
know that
sure.
you know, perhaps the bloom has come off the rose a little bit. You know, this wasn't the 90s. This was the early 2000s, and Rob Liefeld was already the Rob Liefeld we know today.
Right.
I will always respect him for having that kind of attitude. He was still at the con. He was still super gracious.
Yeah.
He did not hesitate to talk to me, even though he wasn't away from his own table. And he was very, you know, self-deprecating, and I will always respect him for that.
I had a very similar experience with a guy where I was at Wizard World Chicago as well. I don't think it was that show. It was another one. And a kid came up to his booth and just kind of started insulting him.
It wasn't the kid in the yellow hat, was it?
No, no, no. Not that story.
Oh, okay.
I remember that story, though. This is another kid. And I watched him not only diffuse the situation, but, like, diffuse the situation in such a way that, like, I, who hate what... I don't hate Rob Liefeld. I don't care for
his art.
You're
not a fan of his work.
I'm not a fan of his work. But at that time, I was younger and meaner and possibly on drugs. And I hated the guy. I was just like, oh, man. Like, yeah, give it to him. And when he was done with this kid, I was like, you know what? Rob Liefeld might be one of the sweetest guys working in comics. Because, like, regardless of whether you love him or hate him, he's excited about what he does. And he was like, hey, I appreciate that you're not into it. Just out of curiosity, like, what would you do differently? I'd love to see what you would do differently. You know, and I don't mean that in a dickhead way. If you want to sit down and draw with me for a while, that'd be cool. You know, would you want to do that? And the kid's like, well, I don't really draw or whatever. And he's like, well, maybe you could just give me some pointers. And not in a way like I'm being a jerk. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, you think
you're let's see you do it.
Yeah, I don't come to your corner and slap a dick out of your mouth or whatever. You know, like he was actually being like really cool about it. And the kid ended up talking to him and like people watched this happen. And we all walked away and looked at each other like, oh, man, Rob Liefeld's not such a bad guy. Yeah. You know, I mean, really. And he's not. He's just, is he vocal? Yes. Is he his biggest fan? Probably.
Sure.
You know, but is he a bad guy? Not at all. At the end of the day, he's just excited about comics.
My last story is kind of a weird, like, it's not negative. I won't say it's negative, but it definitely made me think about things differently. Some years ago, Matt and I were working together at a comic book store, and we had Doug Mankey there as a guest.
Oh, yes.
And we took Doug Mankey after the event. I think it must have been Free Comic Book Day. But we took him to dinner.
That's right. It was Free Comic Book Day.
We took him to dinner, and we were sitting around, and we just, you know, it had been a long day. We were relaxing. He ordered appetizers for the table as though he were paying for them. And then we started talking about comics, and one of us asked him something to the effect of, you know, what's it like? You know, how awesome is it to be, like, drawing Justice League? I think at that time, he had moved on. He had done Superman, Man of Steel, and had moved on to JLA.
Yes.
Which was being written by Joe Kelly.
Yes.
We were just like, oh, man, you get to draw the Justice League. That's awesome. And his response was just basically, it's just a job. It's just a job, man. I'd never once considered ever, in however many years I'd been reading comics up to that point, that anybody involved in making comics was not totally in love with comic books.
Like, he was just sitting at home, like, gushing about this.
No, I mean, not like being a super crazy fanboy about it, but, like, there are way easier ways to make money than comics.
I suppose.
But to him, it was just like, you know, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think it was that he just got out of the military, he was really good at doing art, and he was able to get this job using this skill.
Yeah, I think I remember something
and
like that.
You know, that's how he ended up in comics. And it wasn't that he was a lifelong comic fan.
Doesn't make his stuff any less awesome.
And it's not that he was not a nice guy about it. It's just that, you know, to him, drawing comics was a paycheck.
Fair enough.
And it just never really dawned on me. Like, in my brain up to that point, everybody in the comics industry just wanted it so bad.
Right, right, right.
You know?
They're all just huge nerds.
Yeah, and he just was like, nope.
Yeah.
Like, he answered an ad.
Yeah.
Or something, you know, it was that sort of thing.
He drew the pirate and the turtle.
Right.
You know, and they were like, you were hired.
Yeah, it was just really interesting to think about it that way.
Fair enough. Pardon me, the pirate turtle and the turtle with the hat on.
No, it's a pirate, and
a pirate
turtle
and a turtle
and a bear.
Oh, and a bear.
Yeah, I took that test once.
Okay. How'd you do?
Well, they invited me, obviously.
You failed.
Yeah, I failed.
Like, sorry, failure. I had I don't know if it's a negative experience. I don't know if I should even share it.
Because it doesn't have to be negative.
It saddens me. And there's no way dude listens to the podcast. Steve Rude is one of my favorite creators in the business. I love the guy. I think he is one of the most talented comic painters out there. I've loved everything that he's worked on. And I was so excited when I finally got to meet him. And this was at another Wizard World Chicago show years ago. And I went up to Artist Alley where he was, and he was working on some stuff, and I waited in line to talk to him, and he drew a little Nexus sketch for me. And I told him, like, you know, I love your stuff. I've been a huge fan for so long. You know, anything you put out, I'm going to follow you around. Thank you so much for what you do. You know, I just wanted a little sketch. Wasn't paying for anything. And he goes, what's your name? And I said, my name's Matt. And he goes, you know, Matt, I find that my fans tend to be of a higher intelligence caliber than most comic book fans. He then went on a 15-minute dissertation of not only how smart his fans were, but how intelligent his own work was and how important it was. And it was then that I realized that Steve the Dude Rude is a windbag, an egotistical windbag. Yeah. And I stood there melting in front of him. It's like, oh, just stop. Stop. Please stop now. Like, oh, it was so bad. And like, I walked away, and the dude that was behind me that was like waiting to get something, as I turned and walked away, he looked at me like, oh no. Like, his heart was broken too. You know, like,
it's interesting.
It wasn't negative per se, but like,
sure.
It,
yeah.
On the subject of David Mack, I went up to David Mack, and because this was way back when he had just started doing some of the Daredevil stuff.
Yeah.
Like, years and years and years ago.
The
like,
unreadable issues of Brian Michael Bendis' Daredevil.
And I was a big fan of his Kabuki at the time.
Yeah.
I loved Kabuki. And I came up to him and I was like, hey, you know, I'd love if you do a sketch, my sketchbook. And he was like, well, sketches are $25. This was back in the day. You know,
he was still David Mack.
He was still David Mack. But we're talking 12 years ago.
Sure, yeah.
15 years ago, somewhere in there. $25 is kind of a lot to pay for a sketch back then. Not everybody charged for sketches.
It's true. It was back there was a getting sketches. It was like the old west back then.
Yeah.
There was no rules, man.
No, maybe like you just walked up and anybody like John Romita Jr. just drew you whatever you wanted. There you go. You know, like, yeah. Here you go, kid.
And then they realized, holy crap,
yeah, we can make money on this.
So
it was $25 for a sketch, and I was like, all right, you know, like I love his stuff. Here's $25, and I hand him my sketchbook. And he holds it up in front of me, and I can't see what he's doing. And he takes a pen, like one of those...
Like a brush pen.
A brush pen, yeah. And he dips it in an inkwell, right?
Yeah.
Because he's that guy. And he was like, well, what do you want? I was like, well, I really loved Kabuki. Would you do a Kabuki sketch for me? And he goes, yeah, okay, fine. And he was kind of dismissive, and I was like, well, what the hell? I'm paying this guy $25. And he takes the ink pen, the brush pen, whatever, and he makes one line, then he makes another line, and then he makes two dots. And he goes, there you go. And I was like, what? I just paid $25. And as I'm pissed off, he turns the sketchbook around, and there is the coolest, like, three-line Kabuki sketch I've ever seen in front of me. And instantly, I was like, oh, my God. And he saw, like, how excited it made me. And then he talked to me for, like, 15 minutes.
That's awesome.
And turned out to be a super sweet, approachable guy.
Yeah.
You know, just like in that moment, you know, like everything changed. He was great. I love the guy, you know?
I've been very lucky. I've been working with comic shops for over 10 years now, and I've been to, I don't know how many conventions. And so I've had the opportunity to meet many, many, many creators. Carrie Callen, who was the artist of a book called Halo and Sprocket. You may know him now as the guy who did those weird Silver Age comics, like what if Marvel Silver Age comics were published by DC? He did those parody covers for Comics Alliance that is just like, Captain America, what are you doing? The villains will win if I don't eat my shield, Bucky. And it's like, oh no, Spider-Man has been transformed into a super fatty. It's like Marvel Comics has the weird DC Silver Age.
Right.
And the legendary Julius Schwartz, who the one interaction I had with him was for him to tell me that the name of our comic book shop should be spelled with a K. Like, comic, you should spell comics with a K. I was like,
fair enough, Jules.
Thank you, sir. And I thanked him for it and moved on. But it's been really great to be able to talk to these guys and meet them in my capacity as a comic shop manager. And even as a fan, as I'm now going to things like C2E2 for the show and just for fun. So the point of this question was just to kind of point out that we only get to see one side of these guys.
Right.
Right. Even though, like, in the 80s when there was no internet, we saw no sides. We saw only the work.
Yeah, they were an idea.
Right? And except for the editors that actually interacted in, like, the letters page or whatever, we only saw the work.
Yeah, or Stanley's soapbox or whatever.
Yes. And now we see the side of themselves that they portray online and the 5 minutes we meet them at a convention.
Right.
And it's not always the most ideal interaction. But these are, like, real people. And like we said on the show, John Byrne is a real dude. And though he's got some wacky ass ideas, he's capable of extreme generosity. And it's never as simple as just that one thing you
right,
see.
As that one meeting you had.
So give these guys a break. It's tough to always be scrutinized by the public. And I'm not saying that some of these guys don't deserve it. But some of them, you know, deserve to get a little slack.
Fair enough.
And we really appreciate you guys writing in.
Yeah, that was great.
This has been a fun question.
Great answers. Great answers.
And
we'll see you next week. Huh?
We did it!
Right
togetherness!
Here. We'll see you next week. Thanks a lot, guys.
I've had a lot of rum.